with stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite. We are Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here. Just got a tweet from a police officer outside of the Chicago area that said, "Hey, my app is not working very well, but I heard you, been listening to you on Sirius XM." So isn't that cool? We're all over. I love that. I love that. So Connie Willis here. Catch me at ConnieWillis.com. A lot of you guys asking me about my show, different shows. There's just different shows. It's a lot of fun. It's live. It's all I've ever done is live. It's all live investigation. Go take a listen to it. If you like all the things you hear here on Coast, you're going to like what I do. It's fun. I get out there for real, boots on the ground, and take you with me. It's fun. You've heard me on some of the Where's Willis's when I'm out there. It's always fun to do. And just go to ConnieWillis.com and then, you know, sign up for the newsletter and you're set, right? Then you'll get all the information. Just remember ConnieWillis.com. We go there and then you'll learn all about it from there. And I appreciate it too. Yes, I speak. Yes, I do all those other things. Yes. And audiobooks. It was great. By the way, that is something, if you're a broadcaster, you know, there's certain things you always wish for. One of them, you want to be an animated, this is for the most part, you want to be an animated cartoon. You want to do that voice. And usually broadcasters, we have a good chance of it until, you know, everybody started pulling in everybody from Hollywood. Then you're like, oh man, you can't beat that. But, you know, that's always a broadcaster's wish, to be the voice of a cartoon, you know. But the other one is to do audiobooks. And it's great that some of you guys have said, hey, I'm doing, you know, mine on UFOs or this or that or whatever it is. And you call me to voice it. That's really nice. Thanks. That's a compliment. You don't even know how big that is to people like me. We're like, oh yeah, that's cool. Thank you for recognizing that. That's cool. Anyway, thank you very much for that. You guys are very sweet. It's been 7 years, October 19th, being here on Coast. And I'm very thankful for the entire team that has been a part of it with me, because I came in, they're all here. I guess you know, a couple new people along the way, but it's just, come on. There's no words for it. This is the best station on the planet. And I want to thank the entire team at Coast to Coast, all of them. And George Norrie, thank you for letting me continue to be your little teammate and on the weekends and stuff. I appreciate it. And I look forward to the next Where's Willis. And you guys, is going to be on Friday night with the Ghost to Ghost. And then Lisa Garzon after that on Saturday. Then I'll be on Halloween night. And 7 years. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Now, recently, I got to meet someone through another friend, and I kept hearing this guy's name over and over and over again a long time ago, and I couldn't remember, why do I know this guy's name? Why do I know this guy's name? I know him. Did I actually know him? Did I work with him? Because when you do a lot of work in TV and radio, it's little projects, right? It's a little project, and then it's over, then another project, and it's over, and it's just constantly like that. So you go, all right, was it a project? Did I know them? It's the way it is. It's just the way it is. And so at one point, I finally realized we knew the same people from down south that were Bigfooters. And that was it. They were talking about him a lot. And that's how I knew his name. So I didn't know how to connect him. And then when I met him and he did some stuff on my show, it was called The Davis Report. And The Davis Report has all sorts of neat types of events out there in the world where he has taken that film or the photography of some sort, looked at it a little closer, did some different things to, you know, accentuate stuff, or just to, you know, get the rest of the story, I guess, kind of like that, and all sorts of different things. So most of you know him in with his, it's like in-depth photojournalism, basically. Most people know him because he analyzed the Patterson-Gimlin film. But he's also, and it, when you see it stabilized, looking really good, that's what he did. And it's beautiful. I use the GIF. I use the GIF or GIF, whatever you want to call it, in my stuff all the time. In fact, the other day I said, hey, I use this all the time. Is this you? He's like, yeah, use it as much as you want. That was great. It's beautifully put together. A lot of time, a lot of work doing that. But he's also very well informed in a whole lot of other areas. And one is the love of learning peopling, which is researching how man came about. And that is what he's learned in his search for the first Americans from prehistory to the coming of the Europeans. And if you go to our website, you're going to see, if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you're going to see some, I'm trying to get to that page. I was on it a minute ago. You're going to see he is like front and center. Wow, MK, you are front and center on the carousel on the front page. You'll see this young guy. Who's that young? Is that your son there, MK? What's going on? I'm just kidding. He's got a good sense of humor as well. That's why I'm kidding him. Because he can't say anything yet. I haven't brought him on. But if you look at the carousel, you're going to see him right in front of where it says River Access, Bluff Creek. And clip on that, and you're going to go, and you're going to see all these pictures that he's got for us about what he's going to be talking about tonight. So I hope that you take a look. And you'll see all these very interesting skulls. And you're going to notice the eye sockets are a little strange. You're going to notice the teeth are very strange, the backside of the skull. And he's going to tell us a whole lot more. There's a huge handprint as well and all sorts of good stuff. He's got it. He's got it for us. MK Davis, thank you so much for being with us here tonight on Coast to Coast. We really appreciate that you're here and sharing your knowledge of your in-depth photojournalist, being a photojournalist, I guess. Is that what you would call yourself?
Well, among other things, by the way, congratulations on your 7 years.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
That's cool. No small matter.
That's right. Thank you.
No, I'm an interested person in all things, and in my pursuits, I realize, you know, that we have a prescribed history. It's kind of sanitized and polarized and just placed in the books, and not a lot of people look beyond that. But when you do, you see a lot of things that have no normal explanation, they seem to at times counter what is considered to be the up and up history, you know, that's written in the books, and I just became fascinated with that, and I just became a collector of the unusual and odd things that. Regarding peopling, which means how did people get to where they are in North America and South America. And it's just a fascinating lot of stuff to look at that just will make you scratch your head or even better, make you ask new questions. And I think that if people ask those questions and then search for those answers, I think that we'll know an awful lot more about how it came to be.
Yeah, you've got some really nice pictures for people to look at on our website, coasttocoastam.com. And I know that you have a lot of very interesting things on the Davis Report. You talk about all sorts of stuff and you show off all sorts of things. And as I was looking through those and talking about those with you along the way, it was like, you know what? This guy is known for this and this and this. But, you know, it looks like he's got some other things that you found interesting that you were talking about with me. So it was fun to be able to put that together with you to talk about something different that you have, you know, a love for right now, which is the peopling part of it. And I know it all circles back around in so many different ways, but everything seems to be connected out there. So when, you know, I also love the fact, and I'm going to do something with you in the future with this, is that you like to look up in the sky and get pictures. And was that the original pictures you were doing? you were taking?
Right, you're talking about astrophotography. Yeah, that's kind of what I was doing prior to getting into the Bigfoot field, was astrophotography and taking pictures of, you know, space objects, some extended, some planetary, you know, just whatever struck my fancy. And I learned a good bit about film and sort of the reclaiming of very faint things, how to do it. And when I saw a couple of really good prints from the Patterson Bigfoot film, I knew that someone had been filtering much the way you would do an astro photo. And it was such a superb image that I knew that it could not have come from a bad film. And mostly what you see on TV, at least up until that time, was the, you know, shaky, grainy, dark, hard to see silhouette type films. And I said, well, there's got to be a better version of it somewhere. So I began an inquiry, and it led to me obtaining some of the best images from the film from various sources, and I rebuilt the film in much higher quality and much more stable. I took all the hand motion out, which the mind and the eye work together, and it's hard to interpret more than one plane of motion at a time. So when you remove everything but one plane of motion, then you can see a lot better what's going on there on the subject. And late at night, 2 or 3 in the morning, I hit the preview button after spending untold hours reconstructing the film. And my jaw just dropped. It was such a superb film in imagery. And it showed things that were things that we see every day in life, the biomechanics of a moving and working body. At that point in time, I knew what I was looking at was certainly had to be real. And then began another inquiry about what was the nature of what was on that film. So you go from one thing to another, another, and then in the process of the last 25 years, you cross over sometimes into these other areas where I'm going to talk about tonight, red-haired giants. Fascinating subject, and I have delved into that, and it's a lot of good information about that. And so it's kind of dismissed as being pseudo history, but history is history. You can't change it. So whenever good evidence pops up, that shows or demonstrates that it might actually be what happened, well, then more questions come up.
Yeah,
it's never ending.
It's true, and things are connected, and one thing does lead to the other, and the other, and the other, and another, and another. And some people, it's interesting, you know, you go on a pathway, and you can say, yeah, I've studied this for, 10 years, and people go, well, do you know this story? No, but it doesn't mean you don't know anything about that subject. You just didn't go down that pathway to get wherever they were. And so it's great when we all get to talk and sit around and kind of share the stories as well, because there's some other connections. And along the way, we can figure out some of the missing links, I think. I know I've done that with Paul Sinclair out of the UK and the Kinsella twins as well out of there, and several other people, just by us talking and sharing our experiences and our knowledge. And here you will really do that investigating of getting pictures and even getting your own pictures and doing a lot of comparisons and things like that. Before we get to the giants, though, if I can just go back out into space with you for a minute. Did you ever see anything crazy, wild, nutty or, you know, anything significant that you were like, what is that?
Well, people send me things, and I've seen a few things myself, but there's been a couple of videos that were just, to me, outstanding. And, you know, I can't imagine what in the world could produce the effects that you see in the videos, you know, with such a change in direction that goes just 90 degrees without slowing down or banking or anything. You know, and this is at nighttime, you know, with glowing lights. And then all of a sudden you got one or two lights, and all of a sudden you got 15. And then two or three fall away, and then three or four form again on the other side. And then you got, you know, this tremendous movement. And it's just inconceivable to me that any craft could produce those effects, not that we consider to be a normal craft.
Now, there's a method. I remember some people telling me about it before, and I remember being able to look at a telescope when I was a kid, and I was like, man, everything's moving. Why is it moving? So when you take those pictures, you got to like move with it, whether pictures, whether it's still or video. So, you know what, when we come back, we'll ask them a little bit more about that, because I definitely got to get that, because even if you're out in the wild getting something, it's moving. And it's just some really good techniques to help you get that great shot that you're looking for, that a lot of people are looking for. So we've got MK Davis with us. He's going to be talking about the giants and peopling in Americas. I'm Connie Willis. Stay with us. You're listening to Coast AM. You're listening to Coast AM. Hey there, I'm Connie Willis. We are talking with MK Davis and learning from some of his hobby work, I guess, originally, and he just fell in love with it and just learns all sorts of stuff constantly. It takes him from one pathway to the next, to the next, to the next. He's going to be talking to us about giants. He was giving us a little bit of information on how he liked to look up into the sky and do his astrophotography. One more thing, MK, what was your actual past, your actual job, your money-making job? You were a chemist? Is that right?
No, I wasn't a chemist, but I worked at a chemical plant.
Oh, okay.
I made anhydrous ammonia, pressures, temperatures, flows, all of those things, a huge process.
Well, I was giving you credit to be a chemist. You could have went with it. You could have taken it home.
Well, there's chemistry involved, believe me. It's
all right, so the peopling of the Americas. Take us on this journey.
Okay, well, let's just start with the red-haired giants. And people might be wondering, red-haired giants, what are you talking about? But there was actually, in the legends and lore of the Paiutes, they spoke about a war that they fought with a group of people that were giants, and they were covered in red hair. And that it became so desperate because these giants had been cannibalizing the Paiutes. And so it was one of them or us type things. And they gradually kind of brought their numbers down to a smaller amount. And then they caught them out in this lake, which no longer exists there. It's just the lake bed, Lake Lohentan in northern Nevada.
Okay.
And they made a dash for it. They made a run for it. And they beached their boat. And they had a boat that was like reeds, made of reeds, which was like cattail reeds, you know, tied up in bundles, made into a platform. It wasn't a speedboat. And they made their way up into this cave. And the Paiutes gathered there and tried to talk them into coming out, and a little bit of diplomacy there, and got no results. And so they threw wood up into the cave and set it on fire. And it was allegedly burned them out, burned them to death.
Oh.
And that cave eventually became known as Lovelock Cave because it was near the town of Lovelock, Nevada. Mm. It was rediscovered by people looking for cattle, and they found it, and word got out that the cave was there. People that mine guano heard about it, so they put in a bid for the rights to mine this guano out of there. A guano is essentially bat poop. It just fills up over the years and years. And so they got in there and they began to dig it out, and they began to dig out artifacts. Mm. And so they reported this to universities, and it just, people began to come by, and they just continued to dig and dig, and until finally they exposed some mummies. And these mummies were, like, pretty big. You might call them giants. Some of them had the remnants of hair. And the bat guano is like a preservative.
Right.
The reason for mining bat guano, a lot of people think fertilizer first thing. But that's really not what they were looking to do. Potassium nitrate is the main ingredient of bat guano, and it's also one of the main ingredients of gunpowder.
Oh.
So that was the primary reason for wanting to mine it, so that they could produce gunpowder with it.
I had no idea.
Back to the cave, they threw a lot of things out in the front of the cave. I think total, there were 10,000 artifacts, but they were these mummies, and they were huge. And so, it's been a controversial thing for years and years, and occasionally somebody finds something, whether on purpose or they stumble across it. They found a skull in a sink just outside the cave, just maybe a mile or so away. And it was found by the University of California at Berkeley. And it was an old camp, Paiute camp, and they were looking for artifacts and stuff. And they had a backhoe out there. It wasn't anything being done tenderly. And so they piled up a whole bunch of dirt on one side, and then they go off on hiatus, and when they come back the next year, it had rained enough to wash some of the dirt in that berm that they had left there, and this skull was sticking out, and this was really an oddball skull. When I found it, the written information on it was unusual skull found near Lovelock, Nevada. It had a sagittal crest on it. The sutures were different from a regular skull, had brow ridges, jutting jaw, and it had, in the back of the neck, it had a bony ridge that if you fleshed it out, it would appear to have no neck.
Hmm.
And so that fit the description of what they gave for these red-haired giants. So, things just begin to pop up that where you think, well, this is a fairy tale, but maybe not so much. Then years later, there's a museum in Winnemucca, Nevada. It's called the Humboldt Museum. And I've been there several times and over the years, and I've seen the skulls that they had down in the bottom of, in the basement. They kept hidden in a cabinet. I saw them once on the show Ancient Aliens. I think David Hatcher Childers went down there and looked at them. But there was another skull that was in there with them that was gone by 1995. It was gone. It came out of Lovelock Cave, and it was all stained in the back guano. I think it should be one on the website, a picture of it. It's kind of dark colored.
Yeah, if I'm looking at them as you're talking, actually.
You know, maybe a third again larger than the normal, the skulls that were there with it, the Paiute skulls.
Mm.
And it had double rows of teeth on the top side, and it had overcrowded teeth on the bottom. And it had these huge orbits for the eyes. That was just giant orbits. And it had an elongated skull that was, you know, sometimes that's caused by cranial binding, just a custom. And other times, it's not that. It's something else. And so
Let me ask you about that real quick, if I can. Okay, the sure. Binding. All right. Did they really do that? And if they did, was it to look like these other things that they'd seen before and they wanted to try to look like them for some reason?
I've heard that, but I really don't know what they wanted to look like. I do know what they did look like. And not all of them were cranial bindings, and they know that by the sutures, you know, the little cracks that they have, the growth plates in the top of the head that grow solid when you get old, be an adult. But as a child, as a little baby, they're soft and they're movable. Those things are not in the position that they should be. And that doesn't change whether you bind or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something different. And these things seem to have this, you know, dental irregularities.
Yeah.
And over again, people report, you know, giants with double rows of teeth. I've heard it, read it. But this is an actual photo. And what you're seeing there is an actual photo that you may have never seen ever before, because it was taken by a friend of mine 40 plus years ago down in the basement of this museum. And he became friends with the lady that was running the museum, Miss Pansy Lee, a really nice and decent lady. And she told him about the red-haired giant story. And then, you know, he would go and tell her, you know, a lot of the artifacts they had upstairs were they weren't sure exactly what they were, whether this was a pipe or a duck call, or whether this stone with a cross on it was something they used to determine direction, or what it was. He would tell them. And they got to be just best friends. And so she took him down there, and she let him look at this. And she went back upstairs, and what she did not know was that he kept a disposable camera in his pocket everywhere he went. And he just took snapshots of it.
Did she know he did that? I mean, was she trying to avoid that?
I don't know if she knows it or not, but I do know that the museum now denies ever having that skull.
Can you tell us who your friend was?
Don Monroe.
Don Monroe.
He's an adventurer of the old style. He just travels and is into one adventure after another. He's just an insatiable curiosity, old-fashioned, kind of a Western cowboy type fella that just wants to know more. And he took this picture. I have the originals. I keep them in, safe.
Well, are most people believing that the red-haired giants are what we know as Sasquatch or different?
Not sure there, but I did find out some things. I paid a visit with the Paiutes there in Lovelock, the Lovelock colony, and they told me some things. And they said that these things came down the Humboldt River. And if you just look at a Google Earth and just follow the Humboldt River backwards. It ends up in the Jarbidge Wilderness. And the Jarbidge Wilderness has these reports of these huge, gigantic Sasquatch-like creatures that surrounded a bunch of elk hunters all night long. They thought they had bought the farm. And then if you follow the Humboldt out of Jarbidge downstream, you'll come by another set of mountains, the Ruby Mountains, not too far from Elko. And there again, in those mountains, there are reports of the same thing. Unusually large. When I say unusually large even for Sasquatch. These things would be very tall and covered in hair. So it just seems to fit what they said about they came down the Humboldt River. And who knows what drove them out, whether there was a drought or something of that nature that made them leave those mountains and come down the river. But they came down hungry because they began to eat the Paiutes. And that was they could not tolerate that.
Yeah, I remember seeing like a documentary on what you're talking about. Because I remember going, how do they know they were cannibalistic? And it was in the fire, I guess they would see the bones and they were chewed on and gnawed on.
Well, the Paiute said, in their story, in their lore, they said that they would dig holes in the trails at night and cover them over and make a trap.
Oh.
And when a Paiute would going down that trail under the moonlight, wouldn't see it, step into it, and then they would be lunch for these things. So the Paiutes had a name, and they were called Numa Tecuta. Tecuta means eaters, and Numa means people. People eaters. They call themselves, the Paiutes call themselves Kuktecutas, which means squirrel eaters. So that they kind of get your name came from whatever you were known to eat. Mm-hmm. So these things were people eaters, and even the Salish Indians gave them a similar name. And they call them Sitika. Tika comes from Tecuta, and Sit or Sait. It would mean something like people eaters, you know, similar. So it's you know, whether you want to, I don't know how you view things like that, but it to me, it's kind of horrific if you were the Paiutes living there.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's people kind of stick with you, the story, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and stick to their ribs. Wow. We are talking with M.K. Davis. That was a terrible thing to say, but I had to do it there. We're talking with M.K. Davis, very well known for his in-depth photojournalism and analysis of many films, the Patterson Sasquatch film, as well, you know, the Patterson Gimlin film, as well as even the Kennedy assassination and more. We're talking to him about peopling of America, and we got more to come. M.K. Davis with us tonight, Connie Willis here, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.